being bound. Nasi, in the nose. Iva, like. Dvipade, to the two-legged driver. Chatupadaha, the four-legged bulls. Translation. My dear boy, all of us are bound by the Vedic injunctions to the divisions of Varnashram according to our qualities and work. These divisions are difficult to avoid because they are scientifically arranged. We must therefore carry out our duties of Varnashram Dharma like bulls obliged to move according to the direction of a driver pulling on ropes knotted to their noses. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the words tantyam, gunakarma, dhamadhi are very important. We each get a body according to our association with the gunas, and we act accordingly. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the four orders of the social system, namely Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, are arranged according to guna and karma, their qualities and work. There is some controversy about this, however, because some say that since one receives a body according to the guna and karma of his past life, it is one's birth that determines his social status. Others say, however, that one's birth according to the guna and karma of his past life is not the essential consideration, since one can change his guna and karma even in this life. Thus, they say that the four divisions of the social order, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, should be arranged according to the guna and karma of this life. This version is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada Muni, while instructing Maharaj Yudhisthira about the symptoms of guna and karma. Narada Muni said that these symptoms must govern the division of society. In other words, if a person born in the family of a Brahmana has the symptoms of a Shudra, he should be designated as a Shudra. Similarly, if a Shudra has Brahminical qualities, he should be designated as a Brahmana. The Varnashram system is scientific. Therefore, if we accept the divisions of Varna and Ashram according to the Vedic instructions, our lives will be successful. Unless human society is thus divided and arranged, it cannot be perfect. As stated in Vishnu Purana 389, Varnashrama charavata purushena parapuman Vishnu aradyate panta nanyatattashakaranam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Varna and Ashram. There is no other way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must be situated in the institution of the four Varnas and Ashrams. All of human society is meant to worship Lord Vishnu. At the present moment, however, human society does not know that this is the ultimate goal or perfection of life. Therefore, instead of worshiping Lord Vishnu, people have been educated to worship matter. According to the direction of modern society, men think they can advance in civilization by manipulating matter to build skyscrapers, big roads, automobiles, and so on. Such a civilization must certainly be called materialistic because its people do not know the goal of life. The goal of life is to reach Vishnu, but instead of reaching Vishnu, people are bewildered by the external manifestation of the material energy. Therefore, progress in material advancement is blind, and the leaders of such material advancement are also blind. They are leading their followers in the wrong way. It is best, therefore, to accept the injunctions of the Vedas, which are mentioned in this verse as Yadvachi. In accordance with those injunctions, everyone should find out whether he is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, and should thus be educated accordingly. Then his life will be successful. Otherwise, all of human society will be confused. If human society is divided scientifically according to Varna and Ashram, and if the Vedic directions are followed, one's life, regardless of his position, will be successful. It is not that Brahmanas will be elevated to the transcendental platform, but not the Shudras. If the Vedic injunctions are followed, all of them, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras will be elevated to the transcendental platform and their lives will be successful. The injunctions in the Vedas are explicit directions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The example cited in this verse is that bulls tied by ropes in their nostrils move according to the direction of the driver. Similarly, if we move according to the instructions of the Vedas, the perfect paths for our lives will be set. Otherwise, if we do not move in that way, but act according to our whimsical ideas, our lives will be spoiled by confusion and will end in despair. Actually, because people at the present moment are not following the instructions of the Vedas, they are all confused. We must therefore accept this instruction by Lord Brahma to Priyavrata as the factual scientific direction leading to the success of life. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Yad shastra vidam utsrijya vartate kama karata nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. If we do not live according to the injunctions of the shastras, the Vedas, we shall never achieve success in life, to say nothing of happiness or elevation to higher statuses of living. Again, the verse, again. Yadvachi tantyam gunakarma dhamabhi sudustare vatsavayam suyojita sarve vahamo balam ishvaraya prota nasiva dvipade chadushpada. My dear boy, all of us are bound by the Vedic injunctions to the divisions of Varnashram according to our qualities and work. These divisions are difficult to avoid because they are scientifically arranged. We must therefore carry out our duties of Varnashram Dharma like bulls obliged to move according to the direction of a driver pulling on ropes knotted to their noses. So, I chose this verse because we are living here for a few days at least in the country setting, and Varnashram Dharma is meant to be executed by everyone, and since most of society the vast majority of either Shudras and Vaishyas, say maybe 90%, and they usually work the land as Krishigorakshavanijam, Vaishakarma Sabhavajam, and they engage workers also to take care of the fields. Therefore, I thought of Varnashram Dharma, naturally, to present to you today, in today's class. And, there's many aspects of this idea of Varnashram Dharma. Although, it seems that devotees are still not sure about whether or not they should implement Varnashram Dharma, or even if they feel they should, they don't know how they should do that. Because Lord Chaitanya said, Eho Bhaya, that this is external consideration. Of course, he was speaking to Ramananda Roy, and he wanted to hear about the gopis' love for Krishna. So, in comparison to that, yes, Varnashram Dharma is external. But for the mass of people who are, from Maladesh, who are struggling to be religious and so forth, the Varnashram principles are very supportive and important for their spiritual upliftment, because the principles in Varnashram Dharma are meant to help situate one in the mode of goodness and make the mind peaceful, so that one can execute spiritual life in the proper frame of mind. So if the mind is not peaceful, then naturally people are disturbed and they can't chant properly, they can't worship properly, they certainly can't preach very well. Right? Since we're a preaching movement, we need people who are all satisfied and peaceful. So, you know, the principles of Varnashram also deal with family life. Just like the remnants of the Varnashram system in India is that, you know, there's big extended families. You know, man and wife get married, they have children, but their parents also live with them. So the children grow up with grandmothers, grandfathers, uncles and aunts, cousins, like this. And so there's lots of love floating around in the household, and whatever one is lacking from one authority or caretaker, he or she can get love from another caretaker. So it all balances out. And when the living entity is in the body of the child and at a young age, it requires a lot of support, emotional, psychological, so forth. So that's natural, you know, when there's a child in the house, and we see when there's a child in the ashram, like Devarshi has a daughter here, and naturally, you know, devotees, they come and they are very affectionate to her, right? And so she gets love, right? If Devarshi has a limited amount of love, he's not the Supreme Lord, so he can give some love, and others can give, you know, the love from their heart to the young lady. And so that helps the person to grow up in a peaceful way. They feel very confident, they're secure, and they can proceed nicely in their relations, their human relationships. They can associate with devotees without getting too mental. They can balance all of their life. And everything works out very nicely. When that's missing, usually in the West, they have psychotherapists, you know, to make up for the lack of a loving childhood. But this is just, a cheap substitute. Once you crack a pot, you may glue it together again, but it's never quite the same. So, you know, therapy may help us to come close to what we were supposed to be. You know, in other words, it may patch up some of the cracks in our heart, but it can never really fully replace, you know, loving family and nice relations and all these things. Ultimately, and I've said this a few times in different places, but I'll say it again, that, bhakti sadhana is the most powerful thing. And if one performs bhakti yoga, tivrena bhakti yogena, yujet purusham pranam, in an intense way, then it can send away all of these problems. It can mitigate the problems or neutralize these problems that we see rampant in modern civilization. Because Kali Yuga, it's Manda su manda matayo manda bhagi badrutaha. Everyone's unfortunate, rather slow to catch on. They can't connect the dots together. And they're unfortunate. And they're always disturbed by something or other. In case you haven't noticed yet. But even in our communities, people are always disturbed. And it makes it difficult to to be a effective preaching community or preaching unit when people are disturbed. So sometimes preachers, they kind of go down to the lowest level of, you know, varnashram, and they may use psychotherapeutic, transformational seminars to balance the, the brain cells and the feelings in the heart, which are blocking us, to go forward. And that's maybe unfortunate, but still sometimes and often necessary. But if one performs bhakti yoga strongly, then those things can be mitigated without so much or without any external endeavor. The problem is that we see that a lot of devotees do not have much intense, experience of daily Harinam, daily book distribution, Mangalarti, Bhagavatam class every day, and so on and so forth, because most of our members are grihasthas. They have to work, they have children, they have barely enough time to chant 16 rounds, and most of those are, the brain, the mind is flying here and there. So the problems that we have for our childhood are like we're carrying with us. And that's unfortunate. But Varnashram Dharma is meant for creating a very favorable atmosphere for spiritual life. And therefore, it's the very basic principles. Actually, these are religious principles. Varnashram Dharma is meant to help you be religious so that later you can become spiritual, basically. Because you have to become, generally, you have to become religious before you become spiritual. If you dive into spirituality intense enough, you can just cut through everything and just emerge religious and spiritual at the same time, which is done by chanting the holy name. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Mahaprabhu, Bhakti Sadhan Shrestha, Shunile Kaila Man, Prabhu Ubadesha Kaila, Nama Sankirtan. Sarvabhauma asked Mahaprabhu, what is the most important anga of bhakti? And Mahaprabhu answered, chanting the holy name of the Lord. So by chanting alone, everything is taken care of, because as we say so many times, if you have $100, all of your $5 problems are taken care of, and that still holds true. But who has $100? Who's actually got strong bhakti, in their heart? Definition of bhakti is given by Vrindavan Das Thakur in his Chaitanya Bhagavat. Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga Dan, Bhakti A, Krishna Nam, Smarana, Krandan. That devotional service is the highest wealth. Devotional service means crying while chanting the holy name. In other words, someone's meditation has to be so intense, so deep, that they are cultivating feelings of separation from the Lord while chanting. And in that way, the chanting is fully absorbing the mind and the heart, and it penetrates through the intellectual and mental and bodily planes. It goes right to the heart, and it brings one direct association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, we may not be qualified to chant Shuddha Nam, which is the highest form of, the pure form of the name. But if we are cultivating the right mood in chanting, then we can immediately, at least for some time, get the direct association with Krishna. That's the purpose of chanting, actually. Chanting actually is an abhideya, and the a way to remember Krishna. And remembering Krishna is actually the abhideya, because chanting helps you to remember Krishna, therefore we chant. If we don't remember Krishna while we're chanting, that means we're not actually performing the process properly. Because the actual abhideya or practice is to remember Krishna. So that's why everything we do, bowing down or putting on tilak and seeing the deity, decorating the deity, bringing flowers, bringing articles of worship, preaching. All these things are meant to help us remember Krishna. So here we have a famous verse. This is a verse to Priyavrata by Brahma, who was requested by Swayambhuva Manu to come and to influence Priyavrata to take up the position of manager of the universe. You know, if you think you have a tough problem managing, what to speak of Priyavrata, managing the whole universe. And he had already was ready to renounce family life, and Narada Muni had, you know, gotten to him, convinced him, you know, to give up all of this family ideas for family life. And then Brahma and then Swayambhuva Manu requested Brahma to come and preach to the young lad. So Brahma is calling him Vatsa, my dear boy. It means like calf. It's like it's a young boy. And he says that actually everybody is forced to follow the principles of Varnashram. It's, you cannot really avoid this because it is scientifically, you know, it's a science. It's axiomatic truth found within the universe. Right? It's scientifically arranged according to guna and karma. According to your karma in your previous life and in this life, and according to the modes of nature that you have acquired in this life, you have this, psychophysical makeup, and to try to go against that is very difficult. To try to go against that is like a fish trying to swim upstream. It's a lot easier to swim with the stream. And if you try to go against the current of the stream or river, then you have a very difficult time. So it just makes life a lot easier if you just follow your natural inclination, whatever that may be. And that has to do with work and one's ashram. Varna has to do with the work, the occupation, and ashram are different rules that one must abide by, basically according to one's age. And the topic is so vast that I just, you know, I can only sit at the, you know, the shoreline, you know, and just look over at this big ocean of a discussion of Varnashram principles. And hopefully we can have some discussion about these things and, you know, have some practical discussion. But we see that even in ISKCON, you know, even though we don't make much to do about Varnashram Dharma, but still we're practicing the basic things given therein. You know, we have brahmacharis, we have grihasthas, we have a few vanaprasthas. That means in between grihastha and sannyas. And then we have sannyasis. So that's usually fairly easy to determine. Now, who's who? The brahmacharis are supposed to focus on Vedic study, begging alms. In this case, book distribution, going out, meeting people. Traditionally, they would bring the firewood for the guru. They would perform the yajna, homa, every morning and evening. Now our yajna is sankirtan yajna, right? Because it simultaneously, it has the same effect and even more, and it also engages others in this sacrifice. Grihasthas are meant particularly for giving charity, so they can give up their attachment to material things. Vanaprasthas are meant for living simply, eating simply, so they can prepare themselves for sannyas, for renunciation. And sannyasis are meant to be completely fearless, willing and able to go everywhere and anywhere without fear and, in our case, preaching. So we're already following these things. As far as the varna is concerned, we still have the basic idea that there are some brahmanas, not just those who have a thread, you know, across their chest as a brahmana, because we call it brahminical initiation, which is okay, you know, we can get away with this, because it means person can do pancharatric rituals on the altar, which only brahmins can do. But actually a brahmana is a person who's a teacher, right? Like or a Sanskritist, or a translator, or editor, or some researcher, like this. These are brahminical activities. Counselor, like this. Mainly teacher, person who teaches, that he's a brahmana. Yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dan, pratigraha. The six activities of the brahmana. But the Kshatriya and Vaishya, they also take the Upanaya Samskara. They also take the sacred thread, the second initiation. But they may be Kshatriya administrators, they may be Vaishyas. These are the higher three castes of the Varnashram system. These persons are considered elevated, high-class people. Right, especially the Kshatriyas and the Brahmins are considered high class. They basically get the same education, but they have different functions. So, because the Kshatriyas have to know all the things that the Brahmins know so that they can administrate properly. They have to understand who is supposed to be doing what in the society. And they collect taxes and they protect the citizens. And that's a lot. Nowadays, they just collect taxes and let the people go to hell. Like in Russia, there's a saying that there's two problems. Duraki and Dorogi. There's fools and bad roads. And it's true that the government doesn't fix the roads because they basically don't care about these people, and they're foolish because they're not educated properly. You know, they're just in the village, you know, drinking and so forth. So, but we find that basically everywhere, even in America, poor system of education, poor system of medical assistance, no checks and balances. You know, the leaders, they do whatever they want. It's all countries are in pretty bad shape as far as, you know, religious principles or Varnashram Dharma. Vaishyas, they are also considered high class. Nanda Maharaj was also Vaishya. Krishna was born in such a family. It's considered very pious to work the field and to protect the cows. It's a great honor, actually, to do this. Because, in different ways, I mean, the persons are very wealthy. They are the ones who provide for the rest of society. So therefore, they have a respected position in the society. They're the ones feeding the Brahmins, giving tax to the Kshatriyas, and engaging the Shudras. So they're the ones who are, you know, doing everything. They're the breadbasket of the civilization. Everything comes from the Vaishyas. And everybody will come with their hand to the Vaishyas. You know, the Brahmacharis come to the Grihastha Vaishyas and please, Bhiksham Dehi Mata, Bhiksham Dehi, please give me some alms, some roti. Roti dal kao, Prabhu ke gunagao. With this roti and dal, we are glorifying the Lord. So, everybody's coming with their hand out to the Vaishya. So the Vaishya has a superior position, right? And plus, he gets purified by working the land. Like when you're in touch with the land, you feel, you know, you get a lot of prana, first of all, right? And you're healthy. And you work with cows, and that helps the psyche, and it makes you very peaceful. Cows are the most peaceful creatures. In India, in the mental institutions, the psycho wards, you know, they have some cow therapy. You know, they go around the back, there's a few cows. You know, the people who are a little sick, they pet the cow, feed the cow, and scratch its neck, and like that. It's part of their therapy, because by associating with the cows, your psychological problems will go away. This is a secret. So if you feel yourself a little disturbed, just go be with the cows. Yeah, it works. You know. There was one devotee's daughter had psychological problems. She was working with the cows, and now she's been stamped that she's okay. You know, now you can go back to normal civilization and like that. But all of the, you know, therapy didn't help. But when she went with the cows, then she was purified. So the Vaishyas have this honor to work with the cows. And the Shudras are not considered so high class because they're working for others. But if they are Vaishnavas, they can become Mahabhagavats and they can become gurus. So there's nothing holding them back. We see in Madhva Sampradaya at Udupi, there was the famous Kanaka, who was not allowed in the temple. And he did bhajan with his ektar sitting out in front of the temple. And he was crying and chanting the name of Krishna. And one day there was an earthquake. And the portion of the temple broke. So that there was a little window. So Kanaka could, from where he was sitting, he could see the deity. So the Lord arranged for that. And then at that time, all the Brahmins ran into the temple, into the altar room, and they were, oh God, you know, what's going to happen? The deity is going to be, you know, we have to protect the deity. He's in danger. The earthquake subsided. But then the deity moved. Like this, and was looking towards this crack hole in the wall where Kanaka is sitting. So when they saw that, then they realized that this Baba sitting out there is not an ordinary person like this. And now they have a kind of monument there, you know, in his memory. And he was from the Shudra caste. Then there's the famous Kanchipurna. The Shudra who is from Kanchipur in South India, Ramanuja wanted to take Diksha from him, so he ran away, left town quick because he felt embarrassed. And he was seen in Kanchipur like talking to himself. The Brahmins thought he was a madman. But actually he was talking with Krishna, or Lord Vishnu in this case. And gradually he was recognized and he was given a position right near Varadaraj, the famous deity there. And they allowed him to hold the whisk and fan the deity. They made a kind of section of the altar where he could stand. He wouldn't be on the altar, but he was close enough to fan the deity. So in this way they followed all the smarta regulations, and at the same time they recognized his ability to as a pure devotee. And we have our Haridas Thakur, and you know, there's so many examples of men who were from lower rungs of society and they rose to the highest rung because of their purity. So purity is the force, and that's the thing that can supersede all the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma. But until one comes to purity, which generally the Acharyas state that the level of ruchi is where one can begin to kind of the platform of taste, where someone can begin to disregard the injunctions of the Vedas and which are dealing with Varnashram principles. Because when one has taste for hearing and chanting, then he doesn't have to worry about being religious, because that's the purpose of being religious, to develop a taste. Vasudeva Kataruchi Sanmahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatirta Nishevana. This is the highest form of piety, actually. And we get this by serving devotees, those who are liberated. We develop a taste for hearing and chanting. So once we do that, then okay, then we can set aside. Gradually we can focus more on Bhagavad Marg, not so much on Varnashram Dharma. But until that point, we have to consider the different injunctions of Varnashram principles. Prabhupada says that any society, unless it's divided and arranged according to this, it cannot be perfect. And in the walks in Vrindavan and Mayapur, when he was discussing this in detail with Satsarup Maharaj and Hari Sauri and so a group of devotees who were asking, you know, specific questions, he said we should have an institution which teaches principles of Varnashram, occupational duties. And they said, should the devotees do that? And Prabhupada said, yes, the devotees must do that. Otherwise, how will anyone else do this? Because the people in general, they don't know anything about this. And they don't care about this. They just, oh, we'll just take computer science, become an engineer, we'll make some money, and who needs Varnashram, right? Just, we want money. Money is the honey. So therefore, devotees Prabhupada wanted the devotees to do this just to set the example so that other people can come and do this and become interested in this varnashram occupational duties. Because he said the devotee, he can act in any way. He can act in many different ways. And he doesn't designate himself or misidentify himself in a particular role. He knows that I'm transcendental. So that means he's a real he's a Vaishnava. We do have examples of persons who switched, you know, like Dronacharya. He fought on the battlefield, but he was also criticized for that. Vishwamitra also changed his ashram, his varna. But someone has to be very powerful from austerities and rise above the modes of nature, then he can act in any way. So these injunctions are part of the Shastra, and if we just whimsically give them up, then without consideration of our duty, that we're duty bound to follow these things, like a bull being hooked by the nose, then we risk this injunction of the Gita, na sa sadim vapnoti, na sukham na param gatim, that happiness and ultimate destination will not be awaiting us. We have to practice bhakti with a good foundation which will support us and assist us to follow the path of bhakti in the proper way. Okay, so we'll stop now. Thank you for listening. If anyone has any questions, we can try to discuss some of these things. Yes. I don't really understand exactly what you mean. No, because you said no. I heard what you said, but I think the slight confusion will come from why don't we have this for Shakya?
Shops. 50 devotees walking in shops. Now my question is because all our focus is to be Brahmana. Maybe it's more wrong than I
was. Right, because ISKCON is an educational and religious organization. And you know, Prabhupada said that it's a Brahminical, you know, the goal is to get Brahmins so that they can help to guide the rest of society. Because, I mean, as you said, that most people, they don't even know what is a Kshatriya. It's not just someone who likes to fight. But the whole ethos, the mood of the person is that he likes to protect others, and he's very resourceful. He has Ishwar above. Like when he comes in the room, everybody just kind of, you know, he has some influence, and he's not afraid. He'll never run away from a fight. He has this kind of pride. Also, that if he's challenged, he would prefer death than to run away and be a coward like this. And plus, he's expert at arranging or managing a society. He can see somebody and then say, okay, you should do this, and you and you and you together, you should do this, and you people, you should do like this. His mind just immediately just like sees what is the nature of the person and how to engage them in various occupations or projects, like in this case, and if it was an organization. So that can go on, you know. Prabhupada mentioned that in the Varnashram College, there can be training for Kshatriyas and Vaishyas and like this. And if we see the qualities of the Shudras, they're also completely honest. They never steal. They're loyal to their master. They have some very good qualities because they're still within the Varnashram system. When you go outside the Varnashram system, you have Antajas, you have forest dwellers, you have Chandals, Yavanas, Malechas, people who eat meat, people who don't follow Vedic culture, people who don't speak Sanskrit, people who don't know anything about Varnashram principles like this. But the four Varnas are considered, human. So they're humans. And the three which are highest, they are considered higher class. And for Shudras, the traditional practice, they can do many different things. And the higher you are, you know, the higher class you have, then the more strict you are. And so, and that's your nature. So it comes very easily for someone who's born of a Brahminical nature. But any person can, by the practice of bhakti, gradually come up by diksha and the process, the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga. They can rise up. Yatha kanchanatam yati kamsa rasa vidanataha tatha diksha vidanena dvijitam chayate nirnam. All human beings can manifest this dvija, the Brahminical qualities, by training, just as bell metal can be turned into gold by an alchemical process. So that's the advantage of the pancharatrik system, that we can rise up, even though our guna, our karma, and even our birth is of a very low nature. But it takes time, and it's actually, the shudras are meant to come through the bhakti process to the level of a brahmana, but it takes time. That means that the person is naturally clean, he's truthful, he's simple, he knows religious principles. Right? He can control the senses and the mind. And if someone has these qualities, then they're considered to be a brahmana. But in the meantime, there can be training for people in occupation who have occupations of a kshatriya, a vaishya, or a shudra. That's fine, because it means we're bringing people into the Vedic scenario, and then we give them prasadam, and they also have some kirtan, and they, gradually become interested. It's like bridge preaching, right? But it's based on the Vedic scenario, on the Vedic shastras. Yeah. Educational also. That's education. What's the problem? I don't know. I guess my guess is as good as anyone else's, but I mean, there's a lot of instructions that Prabhupada gave that we haven't done yet, like the Vedic planetarium isn't built yet. It took us a long time to even build Prabhupada Samadhi. The Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhav and all of these tests, that was supposed to also happen in 75, 76. That also took another 30 years, and we only have two of them. So I guess we're, kind of slow in, doing what Prabhupada wanted. One of the things is this, Varnashram College, but there are some educational institutions where more or less, training going on at a brahminical level. But as far as the other varnas, we haven't seen anything manifest yet. But at least something's manifesting. And then gradually it will happen, because the instruction's there. It's just a matter of time that somebody takes it up. But they just have to know how to do that and have the initial investment and the people who are qualified to train people. Something else? You had a question?
So some 10 years ago at the seminar in I think in Pula, you said that one proper grihastha is worth 100 brahmacharis. So can you please elaborate on that point?
Yeah, they're all laughing. All the brahmacharis are laughing. I'm just repeating what the shastra has stated. There's a verse in Shastra that says that one proper grihastha is worth 100 brahmacharis, one proper vanaprastha is worth 100 grihasthas, and one proper sannyasi is worth 100 vanaprasthas. So I guess You know, if you want my slant on that verse, I would say that, you know, a proper grihastha is someone who had been a good brahmachari, maybe a brahmachari, which is the third kind, who's celibate for his entire period of Vedic study, which is maybe 20 years, or at least 15 years, something like that. And then that person goes in grihastha ashram. He has all the training and realization as a brahmachari. And then he has to apply it in the world, and he has to interface with people in the world, and he has to deal with relatives and wife and children that he's living with, a woman. So he has, his senses have to be controlled. And then he has to be selfless and sacrifice his time and work hard and take care of his family. And he knows how to get things done in the world. Whereas the brahmachari is just a simple monk. He goes out and begs and comes back to the ashram and reads for a while, goes to sleep, wakes up, does his sadhana. You know, he's rather kind of, you know, fixed on what he's doing, but he doesn't really see the whole picture of the, you know, the whole society, right? Of course, later, if he continues and bypasses the two mid-ashrams and becomes a sannyasi, then his vision will expand, you know, through his spiritual potency. But for the grihastha's vision expands maybe due to the material potency mixed with the spiritual potency, and then he kind of engages the you know, material things in the service of God. So here's a quote from the Shikshamrita, Chaitanya Shikshamrita by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. For the benefit of family life, such concepts as mutual brotherhood, helping others in difficulty, earning a livelihood by honest means, speaking the truth and avoiding lying are established. The tendency towards social stability is a dominant characteristic of the human species. It is visible in all human races. As a society or civilization, advances, one will find a greater degree of rules for social stability. Right? In other words, an advanced society, you'll find there's a lot of rules for keeping things in order. There is a consensus that amongst all civilizations, the Aryans were the most progressive. There can be no doubt that among the Aryans, the people of Bharat were the most advanced in knowledge, intelligence, and social organization. So social stability includes the grihasthas. So therefore, they're considered valuable members of the society. They already went through the brahmachari training, if they're, you know, proper, you know, traditional Vedic grihasthas. I mean, we have men that haven't done that, and you know, they can be good devotees too, but we see that it has great value that if someone's a real good brahmachari, then he gets married, then he has an advantage, let's say, compared to the people who never lived in an ashram. What is the qualification for marriage? Bhaktivinoda says a healthy body. Right? You have to be healthy to be a grihastha. You can't be sick, because then how can you perform your duties? Ability to support a family, that's for the man. And a mentality suitable for living with a wife. If you don't have a suitable mentality, how will you do it? In desiring to perform any act, a person should see his qualification. Bhaktivinoda also says, actually, no society can exist without a division of varnas. even in matching for marriage, nature and occupational status have to be considered. That's page 65 of his treatise called Chaitanya Shikshamrita. These quotes are from page 63, page 64, page 54, the one I read in the beginning. Here's one last thing I'll read, which was another thing that I had in my mind while presenting this. Because in some places, there are men who are taking more than one wife. And, you know, I mean, there's some scope for this because in the Vedic system is polygamy is allowed. But at the same time, Prabhupada said that such a person should not live within the temple. That outside he can do whatever he likes, kind of, you know. And such a person couldn't take a leading role in the society of, you know, of devotees. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, this on page 59 of his, of the same work, the samskar rites may be considered social vows. According to the Varna, these rites are performed with modification. Like the samskar we had the other day for the child. Other rites are prescribed for all men. Marriage rites, in which one man marries a girl of the same varna, are prescribed for all varnas. The vow of taking only one wife is essential, for any other marriage is simply due to lust. This tendency is exhibited in persons of low nature. In exceptional cases where there are no offspring, a second wife is allowed. So, you know, because this will probably come up somewhere in the former Yugoslavia, I'm sure, sooner or later. So here's your quotation, you know. So the vow of taking one lady for a wife, that's essential, he says. Of course, we know that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a second wife, but that was after the first one died. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, but after the first one died. But everyone else in our line, who are grihasthas, they had only one wife. Nityananda Prabhu had two, but he's an avaduta. You know. So unless someone's an avaduta, or his wife dies, then he should have just one wife. I'm sure this will come up sooner or later. That's a matter of time. Okay, any last questions? Yeah. Yeah. How can there be disagreement amongst different acharyas on the same point? Well, they see the absolute truth from their viewpoint, because the absolute truth is a multifaceted creature, and it has many sides, and so the acharya sees the side that he's seen, you know, looking from, and so they both can be valid, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote that Advaitacharya never has a beard. And Prabhupada writes that he always had a beard. So we respect the opinion of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course. So then we could come up to the, you know, platform of their spiritual experience, their spiritual vision, you know, their samadhi and their rasa. And then when we come to that level, we see that there's some variety within the absolute truth. Hmm. But the basic philosophy should be the same. Some details may change according to someone's opinion, someone's vision like this. But since we're followers of Prabhupada, therefore we present Dvaitacharya with a beard. Right? Out of respect for our Acharya, and we have respect for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, and we see some scope for that, and we won't criticize others who may do that, like in Gaudiya Math, they present him with no appearance. Anyway, that's one example. Okay, so I think we can stop now. Unless someone has some burning question. Srila Prabhupada ki. No permanandi. Hare Krishna. Thank you.